Blind Nil Audio.
Greetings, Carl here. What do you think of people who fly first class? Well, it turns out it's complicated. And today on 50 Fires, in part two of my conversation with Gretchen and Morgan Housel, we talk about that very thing.
Morgan justifies it with, if he weren't in the business class seat, he wouldn't be able to perform the next day.
And now I've gone the other way. Now if it's a 1 hour flight, I still demand to fly first class. I've gone full bore the other direction.
We also discuss how Morgan and Gretchen are starting to talk about money with their young kids.
Our 8-year-old has asked me a couple times, like, hey, Dad, how much money do we make?
Yeah. He goes, and Mom, do we have more or less than $1 billion?
And we finally get to their surprising answer about the question of whether they fight about money as a couple.
I'm gonna start with a statement that won't be bold, and I wanna see if she disagrees with it. I really can't think of one big thing when it's like, one of us said, I wanna spend more or we wanna spend less, and the other person disagreed. I can't think it's ever happened.
I'm Carl Richards, an author, artist, and certified financial planner. And today we're talking about money with Morgan and Gretchen Housel. This is 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meaning. This theme keeps coming up in these conversations around kind of the, and it may just be the age cohort, but this idea of like the community that you were involved in playing. And Gretchen, you mentioned earlier, like where you live now, you know, but growing up, community plays such an important role. And the fact that, you know, our comparison set, you know, was like, you know, our buddies, our friends, it wasn't Instagram.
Right.
You know, I may have wanted a slightly nicer bike, but I didn't want a plane.
Yeah.
You know, because I just didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know that.
You
was
do
a,
now.
Yeah, exactly. Now I do. Of course. Every time I get on an airplane, I think, why am I? This is silly. I should. Yeah. Anyway. In fact, Morgan, we've talked about that in the past. Let's talk a little bit about a decision. And speaking of planes, I remember we had a conversation early on when we were both like speaking was starting to pick up for me. It was starting to pick up for you. And we had a conversation about how speaking, and a lot of people may not know this, but often as part of your speaking contract, it's customary to include business class travel. And you had this little scheme where you would often, because it's also customary to have like just a travel stipend. You can do it either way. Like we pay for a business class travel, or let's just make it easy on everybody and we'll have a travel stipend. And I remember you used to tell me that you would have the travel stipend and then you would make very intentional decisions about how you travel. Do you remember this conversation?
Yeah, I do. I do. It was a big event to South Africa, which is, you know, a 14-hour flight. And they gave me a travel stipend that would cover business class travel. And international business class is like you get a bed, you know, it lays flat, which on a 14-hour flight is life-changing. And I got the stipend and I was like, I can just buy a coach ticket and pocket the difference.
And just to be clear, so everybody knows who's not part of this world, the speaking world, which is not very many people, when you get a travel stipend, the idea is that you get to decide.
Yes.
Right? The idea is that you get to decide. So you made this very intentional decision. I think I remember you saying like, man, this could maybe fund one of my kids' educations.
Yes. Yeah. It was during a period of time when like that amount of money was like, oh, this is massively moving the needle. I think we should clarify that I did not do that. I flew business class that trip. And now when I think about that story, it's like, what the hell was I thinking? But it's actually
younger than his back was stronger.
My back was stronger than I could deal with it. I could deal with jet lag better.
This is one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it. Cause it's just so interesting how our perceptions of what is okay and what is not okay, what is extravagant and what's not extravagant, change over time. And I also love the idea because it kills me. I mean, I still do a lot of speaking and it kills me every time to buy a business class seat, except for the fact that I've really learned it's not an expense. It's an investment.
Yeah.
And that if I weren't doing that, I actually wouldn't be able to continue doing the speaking I'm doing.
Yes.
This is not, it wouldn't be an option. I would just say, this is too much.
Morgan justifies it with, if he weren't in the business class seat, he wouldn't be able to perform the next day. Right. So he has to be able to get on stage and do what he does. And if he had been severely jet lagged with a sore back, not able to sleep on the plane, then he would be up a river.
And by the way, that's why it's included in most speaking contracts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're taking care of their asset. Yeah.
And now I've gone the other way. Now if it's a 1 hour flight, I still demand to fly first class. I've gone full bore the other direction.
I think you told me one time if seat XX is not available, I'm not going.
I don't fly.
One B.
One B. If seat 1B is not there, I'm not flying.
I thought it was 2A. I thought it was 2A.
One B. But 1B is my
seat. But anyway, what's interesting to me about that is understanding the difference between investments and expenses.
Yeah.
Because it's not always clear. Like, of course, like the account at Vanguard, investment, sure. But there's a bunch of things that, you know, these are investments, not expenses. And learning the difference is a really, really big deal. I remember when my wife was in an accident in New Zealand, when we lived in New Zealand, she fell while we were on a mountain, Mount Cook. And we started going to the strength coach as part of rehab. And I went with her. And a couple weeks in, I was like, man, I'm so much more productive at work. Like I'm getting so, like, not only do I feel better, but I'm actually getting more work done. And I had this big dilemma because I was like, this isn't cheap. You know, I mean, there was no question about her rehab, but like for me to be there wasn't cheap. And then I was like, but wait a second, it's probably paying for, in fact, I sat down and figured it out. It did. It paid for itself in multiples. But that's not normally what you would think. Like, I can't go to the gym. That's expensive.
Yeah.
Well, it was actually an investment, not an expense.
I like that framing. I also thought of it like with the flying thing. I just think of it as if like, so we are fairly frugal in the sense that we have a very high savings rate, but if you cannot identify something in your life, a luxury in your life that you like and enjoy and makes your life better and spend money on that, then again, I think the money is holding you captive. It's like you are so beholden to the, like, I don't spend money on this thing that I enjoy and get value out of. Then who owns who? Like, do I own the money or is the money controlling me? And so I think it's actually, that's a good test for me to show that, like, I am using money as a tool. I'm not using it as a thing of worship because I enjoy flying this way. Even if it costs a lot more, I'm going to do it.
Hey, it's Carl. I just want to put a fine point on this idea here. And particularly the framing that's most helpful for me is this idea of money being a tool. Tools are meant to be used. Tools are not meant to be framed and hung on the wall. They're not meant to be adored and admired or protected. Right? They're meant to be used. And money is just a tool. And I think it causes so much personal angst to be so focused on storing it up, saving it, keeping it, and not think of it as a tool. Now, sometimes the use of that tool is delayed, right? I'm using this money as a tool to provide security later in life. Sometimes that tool is right now, I want to take my son on a ski trip to Tahoe. But the point is, it's so helpful to me to be thinking of money as a tool. How are you using it is the big question. Gretchen, what's the thing in your life that's like that? Do you have a thing like that where you're like, I don't know if I should do this, but I really enjoy doing it, so I'm just going to do it?
Gardening paraphernalia. Gardening. Granite boulders is a real...
Granite boulders. Perfect. That's perfect.
She has times where half guilt and half pride, she'll come home and she'll just announce, she'll just walk in and say, I spent $500 on rocks today. that's the thing. And again, I think it's half guilt, half pride, but that's her thing. But that's a perfect example too of like, if she could not do that, you know, identify something that she enjoys and saying like, to hell with the cost, I like this, so we're going to do it. If you can't do that, then you have a problem with money.
Yeah. All like you've mentioned, under the giant assumption that the money's there, you know, and that's, yeah, super good. Okay, we have to hit this. So I'm really, really curious about the relationship, your relationship together, and how you've approached money together. And I'm specifically interested in fighting, which is one of my favorite topics. We around here, we call them heated discussions, so they're not fights. And there's some similarities here, which I was thinking about the last couple of days. I play a person who talks about money for a living, right? Like I'm supposed to, and people for some reason think that means I have it figured out. And I'm curious about both your perspectives on this, because that's actually been really quite hard, because I'm really, really good with other people's money. Like I'm really, really good at giving financial advice, but I still have my own huge blind spots.
Yeah.
As we all do. And when those blind spots show up, there's an added layer because I'm not supposed to have them. You know what I mean? Like I'm not supposed to have them. And that has caused and still causes some havoc in our marriage because I'll feel a little bit bad about it, or I'll be in a bad spot and I'll be like, what's going on around here? And how come nobody's helping me? And so I was curious about if that, first of all, does that land at all for you?
That Morgan doesn't have it all figured out. Yeah, no, it's true. Like he gets on these podcasts and he's, you know, the money guru and how to spend money. And should talk about
are you ever, Gretchen, can I ask you a question? Are you ever in the other room? Like I've seen my wife through like a door and she doesn't know I see her.
Glass doors, right?
Rolling her eyes, seriously.
Yeah. No, I mean, Morgan really is still trying to figure it out. You know,
I also feel like
he just turned 40 and the past 20 years we've made mistakes and I've seen him make those mistakes and he's very much still trying to figure it out. He pretends like he knows everything, right?
I feel like it's less pretending. It's more just like, I'm trying to figure out my own problems. I've written about this in books of like, and I think this is true for any like self-proclaimed expert or whatever you want to call yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Most of the times it's a self-reflection thing. It's not that like, I have for all sure. this information and I want to help, and I want to teach you. It's like, I'm trying to figure this out as I go and maybe I'll share my journey.
Right. He's figured out a piece and now he wants to write about it. But 2 days ago, he hadn't figured that piece out yet. But once he figures it out, then he'll share it with you. But he got onto that, you know, article idea because it was a question that he had in his mind of he couldn't make sense of it.
So good. I think of my work and I view your work similarly. That it's less self-help and more adventure journal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And I often think like whenever I think of those topics, it's usually because it was like an issue that we were having in our household or when I'm trying to figure out myself. And that's how I find these topics to write about. But I think it's like, I think you jump from like the adventure journal to a self-proclaimed guru when you're like, I'm perfect at these. So let me teach you. That's the problem. I think you always have to say like, just like you, I'm trying to figure out life as I go. And here's a couple of things that I've thought about along the way.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously it doesn't stop people from putting the expert label on you, but I never asked for that. And it causes some trouble. So I'm curious, like when's the last, tell me about a challenge you two had around money.
I'm gonna start with a statement that won't be bold, and I want to see if she disagrees with it. Okay. Let's do that way.
Amen. Let's have a fight right now.
In 18 years, we've had a wonderful relationship. Hasn't always been perfect, like any other couple. The one area that I legitimately cannot think of any instance where we've ever had a problem, or any instance where we've ever had even a serious disagreement, let alone a fight, is money. I really can't think of one big thing when it's like one of us said, I want to spend more or we want to spend less, and the other person disagreed. I can't think it's ever happened.
Okay, stop. Is that true?
Yeah, it's mostly true. I mean, we'll have a discussion and I might feel differently, but we'll talk about it over the next, you know, 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, and eventually we kind of land on the same decision. So it's never, we don't have heated discussions, as you said.
But really important, we have had heated discussions about other topics. So it's not that it's just in our disposition to not have a heated discussion. But I just feel like with money, it just hasn't been the case. And what's interesting is that we've had...
Okay, I have to jump in here because if you're feeling like me, look, I completely believe Morgan and Gretchen. I want to be clear about this. I completely believe them. That they haven't had a major fight about money. But that was so unmooring for me because it's so far from the experience Corey and I have had. And we even talk about that in the episode we did together a few episodes back. Money has been the biggest source of tension for us. And I just want to emphasize, like we fight about money all the time. The fights are getting less frequent. They're getting less intense. So there's progress, but they haven't ended. And we've remained committed to the idea that like, we'll keep fighting because we're going to keep, I mean, there's one simple way to stop the fights, right? Like we could just call it quits on the marriage, but we're not going to do that. So we'll keep fighting until maybe one day they'll go away. But I just wanted to make sure you understood, because I know for most couples, fighting about money is normal. And so I just want you to feel that. I love the model that Gretchen and Morgan are giving us here. It's beautiful. And I completely believe them. And in fact, really admire the way they've been able to handle money. And especially with what Morgan hints at here, like things have changed. And often those changes bring turmoil, and they've made it through it, and it's beautiful. And for me, right, that just hasn't been the way my marriage has been.
And what's interesting is that we've had a lot of, our money situation has changed pretty dramatically over the years. And it really hasn't changed anything in our relationship or even how we live. The biggest like oddball thing that we've ever done with money is this house. The house that we live in was 50% over the budget that we wanted to spend. So we were looking at homes and we're like, oh, our budget is X. And then we saw this house and it was 1.5 of X. But we were both like, oh, but it's great. It seems awesome. But that was it was like, really? This is what we're doing? Like, that's kind of crazy. But there was I don't think either of us was more pushy than the other. I think it was pretty mutual of like, oh yeah, that seems like the right thing. It's kind of crazy. It's a lot more than we thought we were going to spend, but like, let's do it.
I do also have a lot of trust in Morgan's accounting and decision-making skills. So like, yes, I said like we should buy this house. It's 1.5 times more than the budget, but can we make that work? I turned to him to answer that question. Can we make that work? Or do you think that's a good decision? So I guess that's where we're not getting into the heated debates about it. It's kind of like having too many cooks in the kitchen, right? All of a sudden your ideas, they get muddled. Or making decisions by committee.
Yeah. That's really, really interesting, because I kind of got fired from that job about 5 years ago. our financial planner and my wife, Corey, fired me. And what our financial planner said, well, first of all, she started quoting me, which really drove me nuts. And then second, she said, the fact that you think you were the best person for this job is hilarious. That's what she said to me. And I was like, wow. But so Corey makes all those decisions now. And it's been a great relief, because she's actually way better suited for it.
Yeah.
And she also had some time. I mean, she was raising 4 kids in the house. There was no time to even be thinking about this. As the kids have moved out, she's had more time and she has expertise in it. So it's been really interesting people have found that surprising, that A, that we have a financial planner, and B, that I'm not terribly involved in the day-to-day financial decisions. I have to follow rules that I'm given.
Yeah.
And my opinion is valued and considered and often rejected. but anyway, that's fascinating that you found that to be similar.
I also feel like even like when we were in college and didn't have it, we've always lived so far below our means that the questions don't, it's not really that big a deal. It's not like, there's never anything of like, oh, are we overspending? The answer has always been like, not even remotely close. And it's been like that even when we were making no money. So there's so much leeway that I feel like we're avoiding a lot of the landmines that other couples might have, just because. So like, if I'm managing all the money, but if Gretchen, you know, checks in from time to time, there's no skeletons she's going to find. It's like there's so much gap in there that it's just, there's a lot of room for error.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point to be aware of, just whatever we call it, like the fortunate scenarios where it's not quite the pressure cooker, because you add that pressure to, you know, there's not enough money to pay a medical bill. Like it could be easy to get into some heated discussions about where the money's going.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We'll be right back with more from 50 Fires. Hey, it's Carl. You know what's hard for most of us? Talking money. That's what I'm talking about. Talking about money is hard for most of us, but there's somebody who it is not hard for. She's been doing it forever. Her name is Shauna Game. And if you've been enjoying the conversations I'm having here at 50 Fires, I think you would love what Shauna's got going on at her podcast. The podcast is called Everyone's Talking Money. And just like 50 Fires, Shauna's goal with Everyone's Talking Money is to go beyond the spreadsheets and the calculators and the budgeting apps to talk about how our emotional relationship with money impacts our lives. With over 900 episodes, that's right, 900, there is an episode for any and every practical money question you have. Some of Shauna's recent episodes include retirement risks to avoid and credit card versus debit card. Which one should I use? You're going to love it. Subscribe to Everyone's Talking Money on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Lolly Focus Pops or Lolly Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome back to 50 Fires. Do you have any, like, as a couple, do you have any, like, little tips or tricks that people, that you use? Do you have a money date? Are there any things you do that have been helpful in terms of talking about money?
I'm trying to think. You know, one thing that sticks out, this is a little bit off the beaten path from your question, but there's been times when, like with books, where I'll come out and say, Gretchen, because of this book, we're going to have a check coming in next week for this amount. And always she'll just have like, she'll be like, is it going to change how we live? And I say, no. And she's like, I don't really care. I think she's able to look at money just as a pure tool. She views it like a spatula of just like, it has its use, but otherwise if you're not using it, like who cares? And I think that's honestly taken so much pressure off of me to just be like, look, it's just like, I have a family to care for, but it's not a family who's just like has these wild expectations about it.
Kirsten, where did that come from? Like this, just like, oh, it's just a tool.
Like I said, I think it's just a product of my environment. My day-to-day life, I'm just glad that the spatula is there. So yeah, it's just who I am and what I surrounded myself by and the city that I live in just makes it that way. I think if we lived in Las Vegas or LA, I think we'd have much different views about things.
We've often talked about too, that particularly as we've gotten older, the friends that we choose to have in our orbit live pretty much the same lifestyles as us. Yeah. And some of them, the ones that we really like, there can be a range of incomes in there. But we all kind of dress the same and eat at the same restaurants and live, you know, drive similar cars.
Yeah.
So I think that's important too. I think it's just like Gretchen said, like everyone is a product of your environment. And if you are going out of your way to be in a city or a social circle or pick friends who are living very differently than you are, I think that's what makes the goalpost move. So I don't know if we've intentionally done that. I don't think we've said, oh, we want to be friends with these people because of the cars that they drive. I think it's just like a natural inclination. And there have people that have come into our lives that are living much grander lives than we are. And this too, I don't think it's intentional. It's just kind of intuitive of just like, I don't think we're really going to like mesh here. I don't think this is really going to work. So I think that's why it's been easy for us, is we've always just been in an environment where we don't have that much pressure to live beyond the way that we want to live.
Hey, it's me again. There it was. This seems to come up in every episode so far. This idea of community, who you surround yourself with, what you're paying attention to on Instagram, right? These things, and we don't want to admit it. We don't want to admit that as adults that we succumb to peer pressure. We think that's for the kids. But it's not. And so this is, again, I was just so fascinated to hear it again, that like, look, the people we surround ourselves with has a big impact on how we spend money. All that means to me is pay attention to it. Like, who am I surrounding myself? It's almost like you have to be, it's almost like it's a garden that just needs to be weeded every once in a while. Like, do I need that You know, do I need to follow that person? Do I need to read that magazine? Do I need to hang out with that friend? You know, it's just like, pay attention to it. And money may be one lens through which you can make those decisions.
Also, to answer your question about the spatula a little bit better, I think when you grow up with means, then I've seen, you know, my dad had a 740i BMW, and I remember that. And I remember like what that car was. And so I don't feel the need to buy it today, because I remember when he also got the Buick after the fact, and it was just as nice, you know, half the price. And so when you've seen what that top level of spending is, and that actually didn't bring our family any more joy. My dad used to say that, like, all that when you're driving a fancy car, the only people that see you and that care are the people on the road with you. They are strangers, right? You drive to your friend's house in your fancy car. If your friend really likes you for you, they don't care what kind of car you're driving. You're just driving it to impress the people, the strangers on the freeway. So he went from the BMW to the Buick, and he actually was a little bit happier in the Buick because it kind of, you know, drove like a boat, is what he said. So yeah, I think when you have grown up with means, then all of a sudden you don't feel the need to see, oh, what is that extra level of spending? What would that give me? And yeah, you also just don't need to experience it yourself, because you've already been to the nice restaurant, and you're like, actually, you know, I remember going to a really fancy French restaurant in Las Vegas with some friends. And what's the kind of French soup that they serve cold? Gazpacho?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, gazpacho.
And it was like
that French or Spanish? Anyway.
Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, I remember getting it, and it was awful. Like, it was just really terrible. But I think if you've never been to the fancy French restaurants, you're like, oh, there is something more out there. Whereas, like, I kind of know that there's nothing out there. You know, I'm notorious for, I prefer to eat at home. Like, I'd like to know what I'm eating, I guess. I'd like to know how it's made, you know, how much salt, butter, whatever they put in it, or however, you know, how much you put in it yourself. So I like to do it myself. And it's not because I'm worried about the cost of the restaurant. It's just like, it's just what I like to do. So
I think that stuff's so important. And to all the gazpacho fans out there, it's fine. Like, you can keep eating. It's fine. Like, we're big fans. But what's so important to me about that is like, and we used the word earlier, I think you used the word experiments. Like, it's so interesting that if you just start paying attention.
Yeah.
Because we used to do this thing where we were like, oh, we want to connect more with our friends, so we're going to go to dinner and a movie. And after doing it like 3 or 4 times, we were like, wait, we're in a noisy, crowded restaurant where we can't talk. And then we on purpose go to a dark room where you don't talk. And we call the value we're trying to express there connection and friendship. So we started inviting people to the house. And we would buy the ingredients, and we would chop together and make it together. And that was the whole evening. Well, it turned out it was cheaper, but that wasn't the reason. It was just a better expression of the value that we were after. And so I think just paying attention, like, does this thing really actually help me in any way? Do I like the car? Maybe you do. Then buy the car.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, and to your point earlier, maybe you are a foodie. It brings you massive joy. Go do it. But the trick is to not do it because somebody else thought it was a good idea.
And the other side of that, I know a lot of people who think flying first class on a short domestic flight is the biggest waste of money, just throwing money away. But I don't argue with those people. It's because I guarantee you there's things that they spend that would seem crazy to me. So just think viewing it individually of just like, you have to experiment to figure out what your thing is. Once you find your thing, don't be afraid to spend money on it, even a lot of money on it, if it's making you happy. That's where it is. But I think what's important is that a lot of people have financial problems because they are spending money on things that society tells them that they should like, but they don't actually like. It's like society tells you should want a BMW. Well, do you actually enjoy it? Like, and maybe yes, but a lot of people, it's like, no, but I'm supposed to like this. So I want to spend money on it. And I think Gretchen and I have done a good job being like, screw all of that. I don't care what anyone tells me we should like. We like these things and we'll spend a lot of money on that. These things we've tried and they don't give us any happiness. So like, to hell with it.
Yeah. Love that. Let's just, in the sake of wrapping up, which I do not want to do because it's been so fun, so fun. But for the sake of sort of wrapping up here, I'm really curious about how you're thinking about communicating with your kids. Cause you both came from different, you know, Gretchen, you had that opportunity with whatever age that was that you like got an opportunity to really see how, I think you even said this, how the sausage was made, you know, and Morgan didn't really have a sense, but he just was told kind of like, you know, we can't afford that. How are you thinking about communicating with the kids as they get a little bit older?
We're still working on it. We're really trying to feel it out. Because I've noticed that Morgan gets this question on a lot of, you know, podcasts and things. And yeah, and he'll, you know, talk about a strategy that we've tried, but I'm like, yeah, but that's, are we happy with that strategy? I don't know. Our kids are 4 and 8. And yeah. I also think we're a little bit in uncharted territory because with social media, with YouTube, I don't think any other generation has been, you know where I'm going with this, right? That they're just so encouraged to spend money and to buy the Lamborghini. And I mean, Mr. Beast, we were watching a video of him a couple days ago, and kid knocks on his door trick or treat, and Mr. Beast gives him $10,000 and just drops it in his bucket and says, here's $10,000, kid. And then the next kid he gives, hey, here's the keys to this house. Like, this is what our 8-year-old son is watching. And so his idea of like, oh, when I say, oh, we're not going to buy that, it's $200. He's like, what? Mr. Beast gives people $10,000 when they trick or treat, right? So I do think it's just a really difficult subject for us at the moment. You know, just kind of like parents are all still trying to figure out how to parent. I feel like we're really still working on that.
Yeah, no, it's tough. Our 8-year-old too has asked me a couple times, like, hey, Dad, how much money do we make?
Yeah.
Which is not an unreasonable question.
He goes, Mom, do we have more or less than $1 billion?
And so
he's trying to get some information here.
I'm not going to tell him because there's nothing he would do with that information that would be good.
Yeah.
But I just bring it up because he's now just in the last couple of months, like he's curious and he's putting it together. And I think he's probably starting to do social comparison with his friends. Just yesterday, I picked him up from school. And he said, oh, one of his classmates said that his dad makes more money than we do. So he's just starting to like piece together like the social hierarchy of finances. I think that's when it gets most dangerous.
Yeah.
And right now, at least our strategy is just like, I'm not telling you anything. Like this is a black box. I'm not going to tell you a single bit of what we make, what we have. There's no upside there. But can I do that when he's 16 or 17? Like he'll probably start putting things together at some point. So it's unavoidable that they'll figure it out at some point. I had a good conversation with someone recently who is very wealthy. Their parents are billionaires. And this person is our age and is very down to earth. Even though he grew up with billionaire parents, he is not spoiled. He's very down to earth, which is like really rare. And he grew up, his parents were billionaires when he was a kid growing up. So he grew up with private jets and mansions and everything. And I kind of asked him, like, how did your parents do that? How did your parents raise kids who are not spoiled little brats? And he said, despite having that much money, my parents never talked about money. It was never part of the conversation. It was like oxygen. We have as much as you could ever possibly need, but we never talk about it. And he said, the kids who become spoiled are the kids for whom their parents are always saying, money is the most important thing in the world. And the parents are constantly driving that home to the kids. And the parents are even subconsciously saying, if you have more money than someone, you're better than them. That's who grows up spoiled. But even if you grew up with parents who are billionaires, but those parents don't really talk about it, then you can still have good, well-balanced, down-to-earth children.
Hey, it's Carl. So this is one of my favorite subjects, talking about money generally, but specifically talking about money with our kids. And what I think we're getting here is a masterclass in the types of conversations you want to have. It's not that we don't want to talk about money with our kids, right? Even at age 8, kids are starting to put together little pieces of social comparison. It's the kind of conversations we want to have, right? And one thing that I think is helpful is a filter through age and maturity. Right, there might be some things that are going to be really important that we share with a 16 or an 18-year-old that we may not want to share with an 8-year-old because it just wouldn't be helpful. And one more thing that Morgan and Gretchen are pointing to here is that the type of conversation about money really matters, right? Helping our kids understand why money is important. It's one thing to teach our kids that money is a tool. If you remember, Chip Gaines talked about this, money being a tool for impact. That's one conversation. It's an entirely different conversation to talk about money being a signal of wealth or power or looking at other people as if you're better than them. So let's just keep in mind, right? Keep having the conversations. And one last thing I'll point out, treat these money conversations in a similar experimental way. Realize that you're going to try something and you may be like, oh, that didn't work the way we thought. It's okay. Keep going. Because the one thing we can't do is stop talking about it.
I think we just try to take the focus off the money. You know, if our child wants something, like he has a VR headset and he yesterday asked for this $30 clip-on fan. And we're like, of course we have 30 bucks to get him this clip-on fan because I guess the headset makes his face warm, so he wants a fan. My thought is that it's going to break in 48 hours, like everything else gets broken in our house. And really, can't you just stand in front of the fan, crack the door, stand next to it? Like, it just seems like a waste of money. And so like trying to teach him like, do you actually want that thing? Because I'm sure it needs to be charged and we're going to lose the charging cable and thinking about all the downsides to it. And just taking the focus off the money of like, how does this actually add value to your life? Of course we could pay for it, but I just don't think we should buy it.
Let's pretend like 20 years from now, I'm still doing the show and your 8-year-old comes on. So he's 28.
Yeah.
What would you hope he would say about his relationship with money?
That he's gotten everything that he needs from it. You know, we hope that he has had a great education and a stable home environment and a wonderful golden retriever at home and great family trips. And that's what he's gotten out of it. And then we also always talk about that we like the idea that we're a safety net for our kids. Mm-hmm. So I would hope that because he knows that he has a safety net below him, that he's willing to take a few more risks. And that's something that I also had after I graduated from college. I had chunk of money that was a safety net. And so I was willing to maybe take that job that it didn't pay as much, but like, I really liked it and the people were great that I worked with. So I was willing to do it. Or I was willing to, you know, get an apartment with this guy or just because I knew that I had that there and I'd be able to take care of myself. And it just helped me sleep at night kind of thing.
That's good. I hope he would say my parents got him and his sister everything they needed and a lot of what they wanted. I hope he wouldn't say everything we needed and everything we wanted. That's going to lead to a spoiled kid. And if he said nothing that we wanted, then he's going to look at
which
it.
Which is what he'd say today. You guys don't give me anything.
But he'd be looking at it with a sense of spite. So I hope he'd be like, everything we needed, good education, safe neighborhood, like experiences in the world, everything we needed, we got. And a lot of what we wanted, just the toys we got, but not all of them. There was still quite a bit that they wanted that we didn't get them. Because we wanted to make sure that they understand the value of a dollar.
So good, Morgan and Gretchen. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Anytime. It was fun, Carl.
As we wrap up, I just want to express my deep gratitude to Morgan, but especially to Gretchen for trusting me enough to have this conversation. I know it wasn't easy. Thank you, Gretchen. If you found this conversation helpful, share it with a friend, a partner, a spouse, maybe even your own parents if you have the ability to. I'd be fascinated to hear stories about the conversations you have as a result. And remember, back from our episode with Elizabeth Poet, it's okay to ask clumsy questions. So maybe this weekend, try to find the space and the time to have another conversation about money, because I know I will. And next week, we'll be back together for another conversation about money and meaning at 50 Fires. 50 Fires is a production of Blind Nil Audio in association with The Roost. If you find this show valuable, and I sure hope you do, please share it with a friend and leave a 6 or 7 or maybe even 8-star review over on Apple Podcasts. It's crazy how much that helps the show get introduced to more people. Speaking of more people, I have a goal that we can use 50 Fires as a spark to start 1 million conversations a month about money. I've heard from so many of you about the conversations you're having around the dinner table, on a road trip in the car, or at your favorite coffee shop, and I think we need more. So if you've got a friend or a family member that you think would benefit from having a conversation about money, or if you happen to give advice for a living, we've created a whole set of free resources. Think of it as a book club about money. It's over at 50fires.com and you can use it every week. We're updating it every week so that you can help me start a million conversations a month about money. I'm looking forward to our next conversation around the fire. Cheers, my friends.
The views, information, or opinions expressed in the series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Chip and Joanna Gaines, Binel Audio, nor Magnolia.